Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Major General, retired, Charles Williams, Director, Overseas Building Operations at the U.S. Department of State. And joining us in our conversation is Kim Hinsman. Well, General Williams, what has OBO done to stand up an interim facility in Iraq since diplomatic relationships have been established there?
Well, what we have done, we have put in place several facilities to handle the interim responsibilities. These were stood up very quickly, which allowed our new ambassador and his staff to be ready to take over on the 1st of July of this year.
How about a permanent facility?
A permanent facility is being planned. We are in the process now of looking at properties. It will be a property that will be sufficiently sized to allow us to build a diplomatic community along the same lines that I've described earlier in my interaction here with you. We are hopeful could be launched as early as next year. And then once again, we would have a very short duration for completing it.
General Williams, what other embassies or U.S. facilities in the world are considered to be in high-risk areas, and how does the OBO address such security threats?
Well, first of all, the identification of what is in a high-risk area or what needs to be dealt with from a security point of view is adjudicated by another element in the department, our diplomatic security. So we are the doers once the identification of the problem has been cited by diplomatic security.
And so what is it that you do once they identify those areas where they are high risk?
Well, Kim, what we do, first of all, is our protocol calls for a survey. We survey the particular facility. And as I have mentioned, we have a standard process in place which allows us to move very quickly to put this particular facility in our strategic plan. And if it's an urgent facility, the plan is flexible enough to move it from the back to the front, et cetera, and then make the presentation through the approval levels, OMB and the Congress. And once funding is secured, then we launch the construction.
Well, we've talked a little bit about the challenges of maintaining buildings around the world. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the benefits and challenges of the Department of State's model of managing its own real estate?
Kim, we think we have a very unique method of managing real estate. It's a combination of using the private sector and government. Once again, blending that experience that I gain by being in both arenas. We have a site search team. It's a global team, international real estate firm, well-heeled and dealing with real estate in these countries. We have a stable of these kind of firms. That's the first part. The second step would be then to bring in my special real estate team. We have credentialed people on staff, 30 or 40 of them, in real estate, to go in and draw on what the first set of eyes or the private sector global firm has found. They isolate around one or two of these, working with the particular embassy post concern, and come away with a preference of one or number two. Bring this back, we make a final decision based on the technical capabilities of the particular site, and then we move to acquire and negotiate the real estate. We do an appraisal, we do everything that happens here in the United States around price, we negotiate very hard, and end up with, in our opinion, protecting the government quite well.
We've talked about the industry advisory panel that advises you on a number of different best practices. Do you think this is something that you would recommend to other agencies implementing similar kinds of advisory panels?
Kim, I feel so strongly about this particular practice that I would say an organization like the one I'm involved with, I don't believe going forward in the future could survive without this. This has been just a breath of fresh air. These individuals are roll up their sleeves. It's pro bono. They are not paid. They are there because they want to be there. They believe in their country. They are happy to support us. They put it all on the line and, quite frankly, help me work through issues. The best way to describe it, it's a big staff meeting. We roll up our sleeves, we brainstorm, and we coalesce around a particular solution, and they go out and support it. I call them my 9 ambassadors of the Overseas Building Program because they support it quite well.
Last couple of questions here will draw on your experience. So thinking about your lessons learned in your current role, what advice do you have for other federal leaders who manage large-scale international projects?
First of all, the international business is a little tricky, and you have to have an appreciation for the host country's unique rules and the like, and have to find a way to understand that they all will be different. There's some patience we have to be sensitive to. And then, of course, you have to deal in very straightforward business terms to make certain that the end result can be what it should be. And sort of a summary of all of that is that be very knowledgeable and through whatever means and methods you can about the particular region, the country that you are going to attempt to do business. Don't go in cold. Have the right team and the right help. And in many cases, this requires you to draw on well-heeled private sector firms that have been working in the international arena for quite some time to help you work through the maze.
And while you're giving advice, what advice would you offer to someone just beginning their career in public service?
Well, first of all, public service is unique. I frankly think, being a person of the background that I have, all should seek to somehow give some time to the public, but that's more of a personal view about it. But someone who's interested, and I do have an opportunity to talk to several groups from time to time, be very serious and focused before you launch, because in the public service, you will touch things and you will engage in activities that affect people. And so it's serious business. It's not something to just sort of try and not be very serious. It can be tremendously rewarding if you are interested in really coming away with some notion as to how government works, and this is a wonderful place to do it. And just to put a specific plug in for my organization, I don't think there is a place for an individual who has the skill sets that we promote in our organization. There's a better place anywhere to work. You get a global view of the world. You get an opportunity to travel and do useful things. You can operate pretty much like you would do in the private sector. And the buying, the selling, disposing, the leasing, the maintaining, and building of facilities, to me, is a dream of any architect, engineer, planner, any place. And it allows you to serve and improve the quality of life for your colleagues in our country at the same time. What better way for anyone to serve?
General Williams, thank you. We're out of time. Kim and I want to thank you for squeezing us in your very busy schedule.
It's been delightful. I really, really enjoyed that. And I just want to say one other thing. On the 13th of October, we have an industry day. It will be in the Ronald Reagan building. We are inviting everyone to come. Right now, we have about 400 people signed up. And if you don't remember anything else that I've said today, remember there is an industry day, October 13th, Ronald Reagan Building, downtown Washington, D.C. sponsored by the Overseas Bill and Operations, and we want you there.
Thank you, General Williams. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Major General Retired Charles Williams, Director, Overseas Building Operations at the U.S. Department of State. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and research and get a transcript of today's very interesting conversation. Once again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.